Welcome and thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Acts of Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and coming up next is a story about something we just don't want to talk about, the natural gas business. Host Bruce Gellerman sniffs out the cracks in the nearly 2 million miles of pipeline that run under our cities.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman. Natural gas. It burns cleaner than coal or oil. It's cheap and convenient. It's right at your fingertips. 65 million American households use natural gas to heat and cook. And thanks to the mining technique known as hydraulic fracturing, supply is soaring, and so is demand. The International Energy Agency says we're on the verge of the golden age of natural gas that promises to transform the world's energy economy. It's a bridge fuel to the future. But delivering on natural gas's promise and distributing trillions of cubic feet through a maze of millions of miles of pipelines is fraught with so many potential problems and real dangers that critics say natural gas might be a bridge too far. My investigation led me to natural gas sleuth Nathan Phillips. I followed him up a steep, secretive flight of stairs at Boston University.
So this is a part of Boston University that almost no one sees.
Professor Phillips is director of the university's Center for Energy and Environmental Studies. He unlocks stairway doors leading to his rooftop lab.
This is kind of what we would consider an urban laboratory.
Phillips studies a city the way a biologist studies an organism, as a complex, living, breathing thing.
So we're about, I think, something like 110 feet off the ground now on the top of the College of Arts and Sciences building at Boston University.
What a great view. Yeah. We can see all the way down the Charles into Boston, into Fenway Park there.
That's right. And so in the back there is what we call the urban metabolism meter or sensor. And so that kind of contraption there on that little mast is measuring the carbon dioxide level and the methane concentration as it passes by that meter. We call it the pulse of the city. But it gives us information about where humans are and what they're doing, where the natural systems are and what they're doing at any time of the day. We're measuring this 10 times a second, every minute, every hour, 24/7, 365 days a year.
From this vantage point, using sophisticated instruments, Professor Phillips takes the pulse of the city, precisely measuring urban metabolism, the emissions of greenhouse gases produced by the comings and goings of cars and trucks, the burning of fuels to power factories and utilities, heat homes and office buildings. In terms of global warming, molecule for molecule, methane is 21 times more powerful a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It's odorless, colorless, lighter than air, and combustible, which is why methane is so useful. It's the major component of natural gas. Below the streets of our nation's cities snakes a massive network of natural gas pipelines, more than 2 million miles of low-pressure pipes. But weather, water, and accidents all take their toll on these gas distribution pipes, creating problems that most of the time are out of sight and mind, but literally under our noses. Professor Nathan Phillips stands on Boston's Commonwealth Avenue, not far from Fenway Park, and uses another sensitive measuring device to monitor for methane, his nose. Leaks in the gas distribution pipeline network cost billions of dollars a year in property damage. Explosions kill people, and methane contributes to climate change. In fact, critics say so much of the powerful greenhouse gas leaks into the atmosphere that over the short term, natural gas may disrupt the climate more than oil or coal.
About 9 months since I became aware of this problem, and ever since then I've started to, keep a smell out, I guess you'd say, for leaks.
And right there, in the street, by the curb, there's the telltale smell.
So mercaptan is the substance that they put in natural gas so that if there is a leak, people can smell that. And
I smell a leak.
Yes. So everyone I've, well, many people I've talked to know about a leak. They say, oh yeah, there's one down the street from me. And really, we have a million anecdotes about leaks, but when you put it all together and map it, it's pretty amazing how many leaks there are distributed over a city like Boston.
And mapping Boston for leaks is just what Nathan Phillips did. He drove around the city with pipeline expert Bob Ackley.
Okay, we're going to go right up Harvard Street to Commonwealth Ave, and we'll go right down Commonwealth Ave through Kenmore Square.
Bob Ackley is a former gas company leak investigator. Now he runs a consulting firm, Gas Safety USA. And on his truck is a sensitive Picaro methane tracking device, similar to the one Professor Phillips uses at his rooftop lab.
You have two special pipes, nostrils, I guess, on the front end of your SUV here. What are those?
Well, that draws in an air sample from ground level and tests it with my flame ionization unit. So I'll be able to drive down the street and detect gas. And I also have one on the rear that's for my Picaro instrument that will actually document the methane readings on Google Earth. It tracks them and will place them via GPS points. So I can take a running sample from the ground and it'll chart it right on Google Earth.
Okay, we're at Commonwealth and Gloucester, 5.3. Okay, lots of leaks here, 2.2.
The natural background level of methane is 2 parts per million, but as Ackley and Phillips drive around the area where I smell the leak, the digital readout jumps.
2.7, 2.8, oh, 5.2. Okay, so there was a big spike that we just, 11.1, so that's over about 5 times the global background value, back down to 2.4. So very noisy in here. 5.4, this is one of those areas of, we called a an area of neglect.
The team also drove around San Francisco mapping gas leaks.
What we see are some clean streets and then streets that have been neglected. So leak, leak, leak as you drive through. It's kind of a hodgepodge.
Some of the methane leaks Nathan Phillips and Bob Ackley detected measure 30 parts per million. That's 15 times the natural background level. But Ackley says even small leaks can quickly add up to a large volume.
But we've captured as much as, I think it's around 600 cubic feet per day out of a leak. So, I mean, the average household uses about 200 feet. So that would be 3 days' worth of gas leaking out of one leak in one day.
I was very surprised to see how many leaks there were.
One reason Professor Nathan Phillips was surprised is because Boston's gas utility spent $71 million making the system more efficient. But just last year, its estimated gas lost from leaks was worth more than $40 million.
I wasn't expecting to see anything like what we saw.
No, you'd expect that a gas company would want to fix their leaks because they're losing gas, they're losing money.
Well, the costs of the leaks are not borne by the industry. They are borne by the ratepayers. So you and I, to the extent that we're using gas, we're bearing the costs of the inefficiencies in the system.
How much, what kind of percentage, a guesstimate of the gas that's going through these pipes is actually leaking into the atmosphere?
That's a big unknown. So the industry is required to report what they call lost and unaccounted gas to the federal government. The amount of unaccounted and lost gas reported to the Energy Information Administration is all over the map.
Neither the Pipeline Hazardous Safety Materials Administration, the federal agency in charge of gas pipes, nor National Grid, the largest natural gas utility in New England, would talk with me about gas leaks. But I did speak with Mark McDonald. He used to inspect leaks for National Grid and now heads the New England Gas Workers Association, which had to file a lawsuit to learn how many gas leaks were reported by Massachusetts utilities.
Right now, it's generally 3-4% of all gas in the distribution side is lost.
You estimate that there's 22,000 gas leaks in Massachusetts?
That's not an estimation. That's exact. I have documentation from each gas company showing at least 22,000. Now, that's probably makes up 90% of the companies in Massachusetts, so that number is even higher. I would probably guess around 25,000. And there are many leaks that haven't even been detected, I'm sure. So it's significant. It's definitely significant.
Most leaks are small, the size of pinholes. Gas utilities rank them a 3 on a scale from 1 to 3. Some are 2s. They're leaks to watch and schedule for repair. But a 3 can quickly turn into a 2, and a 2 into a deadly 1. It's what happened in Philadelphia.
With daylight, a crater of clues from this explosion in a neighborhood where residents reported smelling gas.
Boom. The corner store just went up.
The power.
One gas worker died. 6 were injured. That was in January 2011. And that September, it happened in Seattle.
The couple went to the hospital with serious injuries after the natural gas explosion utterly wiped out their home. Investigators now believe the huge fireball may be linked to a tiny discovery.
We have excavated the pipe, and there is a small leak that is consistent with what we found.
Homes within a 5-mile radius were evacuated. 4 other gas pipeline leaks were discovered. Less dramatic, but also deadly, is the effect tiny gas leaks in the ground can have on nearby plants. Environmental professor Nathan Phillips says natural gas leaks disrupt the urban metabolism.
What we know is bad for many trees is they need oxygen in the soil.
Phillips says just like people need oxygen, so do the roots of plants. When natural gas leaks into the ground, it displaces oxygen in the soil and dries the earth. Trees near natural gas leaks can choke and die of thirst.
The most active part of the root system are the fine roots, and those are the first to go. They're delicate, but they're the workhorses that bring in the nutrients, bring in the water, and if they starve and they start dying, you're cutting off the supply system for the rest of the tree.
So it's basically a killing of the roots.
Gas leak investigator Bob Ackley says before the invention of gas detectors, inspectors located underground leaks by looking for damaged vegetation. He says it's still a valuable clue.
And that's what you look for in a vegetation survey, is a tree that looks like it's dying. A tree's dead and dying vegetation. And all the gas companies have it on their website. A sign of a gas leak is dead and dying vegetation for no apparent reason.
So one tree, how much can one tree be worth? How do you put a value on a tree?
Well, the arborists have a formula they call the trunk formula method, where they go by species, condition, and location of the tree. I'll just give you a quick example. We have a tree over by LaSalle College in Newton that's about a 50-inch beech tree that I think we valued at around $47,000.
That's one tree. Take hundreds or thousands of trees damaged by gas leaks, and you're talking a lawsuit. Attorney Jan Schlickman.
The trees, you know, are the sentinels.
Schlickman and Bob Ackley have created the Massachusetts Public Shade Trust, surveying suburban Boston communities, charting trees damaged from leaks.
The trees are telling us something. They are sending out, you know, a loud signal to us that, look, if it's killing them, then it's killing the quality and the health and safety of life in the urban environment.
Attorney Jan Schlickman is best known for his environmental lawsuit chronicled in the book and movie A Civil Action. Now Schlickman is suing gas utility National Grid on behalf of 5 Massachusetts cities, seeking compensation for the alleged damage gas leaks due to their trees.
So it's doing great damage to these old stately trees, and then when they die, the double tragedy is that oftentimes these wonderful trees are cut down, replaced with a sapling, and then the sapling then doesn't thrive and then eventually dies as well. And you have this repetitive process with the cities and towns and landowners not being aware of, you know, the root cause of the problem.
Hey, Bruce, come over here. This is just one of the leaks that I can smell around the building.
The building is the gold-domed Massachusetts State House. And sniffing out the leaks in the street behind it is Representative Lori Ehrlich. The State House is the nation's oldest. So are some of the underground gas pipes here. And they're leaky.
We're standing here on the corner of Hancock and Mount Vernon Street. And though I'm concerned about this leak, there are many other leaks around the building. But even more of concern are the 4 stories of residential dwellings that are right next to the leak that I'd be most concerned about.
This is iconic. This is Beacon Hill. It doesn't get any more plush and powerful, and yet we've got leaks right here.
Well, perhaps it's a message to the legislators in the building that it's time to pass some legislation addressing this issue. This is the second session that I've proposed 4 bills that deal directly with this issue. And the fact that we have a leak and maybe many other leaks right outside the State House, I think just elevates it to a a point where we need to do something about it. Before more people are killed, before property is damaged, before trees are killed, and before we have a much bigger problem.
Just a few months before this interview behind the State House, two blocks away, gas leak explosion sent two manhole covers flying and shattered windows. Representative Ehrlich's bills would require that Massachusetts gas utilities fix all 25,000 leaks in their pipes within 3 years and compensate cities and property owners for the damage methane does to trees and plants. Tom Kiley is president of the Northeast Gas Association.
We oppose those bills for a variety of reasons, a lot of them economics and a lot of them because we feel it's truly unnecessary to do that. Clearly that the safety of our customers and the consumer and residences is paramount of the natural gas industries. But we feel that the costs that would be added to this are unnecessary and wouldn't achieve the goals that they people have. And gas companies do have aggressive programs to make repairs, to replace cast iron and bare steel mains and other programs.
It can cost gas companies $1 million a mile or more to replace leaking pipes, but it can take decades. And critics say, in the meantime, customers are paying for leaked gas and the pipes are dangerous. Some of the pipes are 100 years old and made of cast iron. In the 1950s, utilities began replacing them with bare steel pipes, but gas corroded them, so they were replaced with coated steel pipes. Gas leak investigator Bob Ackley says the problem is nationwide.
I'm traveling down to Washington, D.C. this weekend. I've already been down there and done some spot checks. The problem is just as bad or worse with the rotting steel. So wherever there's cast iron and old steel in the ground, you're going to have a problem.
Since the 1970s, utilities have been laying underground pipe made of polyethylene or plastic. It's flexible, easy to handle and install, and it doesn't corrode, but it does crack. And unlike cast iron, which can last a century, Mark McDonald of the New England Gas Workers Association says plastic is only good for about 45 years.
Companies believe it's going to last forever. We're already replacing it. The number one problem with polyethylene, it has no resistance to damage. So the more plastic you put in, the more problems you're going to have with people digging in and around natural gas lines. It's a major problem. It's going to get larger. The more plastic you put in, the bigger that problem's going to get.
Accidents are the single biggest cause of pipeline damage, from backhoes and jackhammers used by road construction crews and workers laying electric lines and cables. The message? Dig safe and sniff.
I'm at about 3.4, right at the leak. Yeah, I think it was up to 6 if I pulled up a little bit.
Leak expert Bob Ackley says if you smell something, say something, which is exactly what he does after measuring the leak behind the Massachusetts State House.
I mean, I would grade this if it was my house, definitely a grade 1 leak. I mean, I'd want it repaired immediately. It's a hazard. So I'm going to call the leak into National Grid now and just make sure everything's okay here. Hi, Bob Ackley here. I just want to report a gas odor in Boston by the State House.
Coming up next week, from problems with low-pressure neighborhood gas pipelines to the dangers of the really big ones.
Bringing a 42-inch high-pressure natural gas pipeline into downtown Manhattan boggles the mind. I mean, it's not a question of if something happens. It's a question of when.
You can hear great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away, beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes, and you sleep out every night. Where the boxcars all are empty, and the sun shines every day. On the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. in the big rock candy mountains. All the cops have wooden legs, and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth, and the hens lay soft boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit, and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall, the wind don't blow, in the big rock candy mountains. In the big rock candy mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come a-trickling down the rocks. The brakemen have to tip their hats, and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and a whiskey too. You can paddle all around them in a big canoe in the big rock candy mountains. In the big rock candy mountains, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work in the big rock candy mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the big rock candy mountains.
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to thee. There's too much confusion, baby, I can't get no relief. There's many drank my wine, how many dig my own? None will ever load the mind. The body, they feel what it's worth. Get excited. Let me be kindly.
That famous day in history, the men of the 7th Cavalry went riding on. And from the rear a voice was heard, a brave young man with a trembling word ran loud and clear.
What am I doing here? Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go. Hey, Mr. Custer, please don't make me go. I had a dream last night about the coming fight. Somebody yelled attack, and there I stood with the arrow in my back. Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go. No. Look at them bushes out there. They moving. There's the engine behind every one. Hey, Mr. Custer, you mind if I be excused the rest of the afternoon?
Hey, Charlie, duck your head.
Oh, you're a little bit late on that one, Charlie. Whew, I bet that smarts.
They were sure of victory, the men of the 7th Cavalry, as they rode on. But again from the rear a voice was heard, that same great voice with a trembling word rang loud and clear.
What am I doing here?
Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go. Listen, Mr. Custer, please don't make me go. There's a redskin waiting out there, fixing to take my hair. A coward, I've been caught.
Mr. Custer, I don't want to go. No. I wonder what the Indian word for friend is. Say, friend. Kemosabe, that's it. Kemosabe. Hey, out there. Kemosabe. No, that isn't it. Look at him out there. Running around like a bunch of wild Indians. Oh, this ain't no time for joking.
And now for something completely different.